Hi, I'm Chanel Suku. 10 years ago today, the Isle of Man saw its worst snowfall in 50 years. Over 700 homes were left without power, all schools closed, roads were closed, and thousands of livestock died. The events of that day still haunt many residents. I spoke to many of those affected, from farmers, politicians, and weather forecasters.
I've never seen snow like it in Peel. Snow on the beach, snow on the promenade, and it was so snowy I couldn't even get my car out.
We're struggling with access into areas like Cronkybody, Dalby and Patrick.
All schools will close at 1 o'clock.
Any people out there with diggers or 4x4s or whatever, they should get in touch as well.
They're just caught. What is so frustrating is you feel so helpless in it.
That was a horrendous day 10 years ago when the snow came overnight. We were really unprepared. As much as the forecast had said there would be snow, not to the extent that came down. And I don't think any farmer was really ready for that. It was horrendous.
I know farmers were one of the most people affected. They lost cattle, they lost business. The agriculture minister at that time was full gone, and he said it's going to take the farmers about 4 months or more than 4 months to recover from that loss. Can you think back to that loss? Did it take that long or did it take longer, or are farmers still kind of paying the price for that?
Absolutely, they really are. There was generations of stock lost, especially on the hills on the Isle of Man and even on some of the lowland farms where ourselves, we lost a generation of breeding heifers. It was most awful scenes, but it was weeks later before we found them. We hunted for them and we couldn't find them, along with many other farmers that hunted for their stock. Volunteers, helpers, general public, anybody came out to help. But the scars for the people as well, their mental health, I don't think it's gone away. And now, 10 years on, hearing snow is coming again, maybe to the extent it was back then, is quite scary, is really worrying. And I don't think farmers want to relive that again. So they are prepared this time. The Met Office has been exceptional. I think technology might have moved on in 10 years to predict the weather forecast. Farmers themselves use a lot of social media, a lot of internet, so they're able to gauge themselves when it's coming. And also, farmers have got good buildings now. You know, there's a lot of steel buildings being erected, but that said, back then even the buildings came down, the infrastructure got broke. It was absolutely horrific. The price for constructing a new shed or a new barn would have taken a long time. It's just the impact on the farming community all around. We did pull together, but it was a horrendous month or 2 months for the snow to thaw.
What did you learn from then, and how have you been able to take it forward now?
Mother Nature is so unpredictable. We can be prepared as much as we can. It can come in overnight like it did then. And the Met Office don't see it coming. It comes so quickly. And it's the time. You have an extensive piece of farmland where you have sheep, cattle, mixed farming. You have to try and get them from maybe the higher ground to the lower ground. You physically can't get all of the jobs done that you need doing with the minimum amount of staff on farms generally. So you're relying on calling in favours from other people to help you. When we see it coming now, I think a lot of people jump to it and get prepared. You're better to be over prepared than nothing at all. Don't rest on your laurels is one thing we've definitely learned. But Mother Nature on the Isle of Man is so unpredictable.
How were you affected? How were you guys affected? I know you mentioned earlier that you lost a generation and stuff like that. Thinking back to it, what was it like?
As a farmer family, I do think we take it to heart really badly, to be honest. We did lose heifers, we did lose sheep. The west coast of the Isle of Man got hit the most. We had farming friends that were absolutely devastated with their stock losses as well. It was something we talked about for a good few months and years after. I know when the book was released, we were sent a copy and we've never opened a page of it. You kind of don't want to relive it again. There was a lot of emotion. There was a lot of people frustrated and anxious, fell out with neighbours, fell out with friends. I think now those wounds are starting to heal. But at the time, there was just so much pressure to save your stock. Tempers were high, fretting. It was just such a worrying time. And I think from then we've developed to be more resilient, if that's even possible, because farmers are resilient anyway. But you know, you're responsible for your stock. They can't live without you and you can't live without them, so they come first every single time.
Phil Gawn, former DEFA minister, I think from the period we're talking about. Yeah.
Do you remember what you were doing when all of this broke out?
Well, I do, because where we live, we're out in the middle of the country, and we also got cut off by the snow. So we were 2 or 3 days before we were able to get out. But fortunately, the only animals that I had at the time were a pair of horses, and they were okay, and we had hay and we could manage. But quite clearly, all around us, there were people who had sheep and other livestock. It became very, very obvious very quickly that this had been quite a big disaster for the Manx farming industry.
Now, speaking of the farming industry, I was listening back to one of your interviews, and one of them, in one of the clips, you were actually asking for more help. You actually said, if people are able to, or if people have 4x4s, and if they want to come out and volunteer their time, they're more than welcome to come and help. How devastating was it for the farmers? I mean, you were DEFA minister at that time.
It was very, very serious for many farmers. I mean, some weren't too badly affected. Some had the opportunity to bring livestock into better places where those were available. But others who had a lot of sheep on the hills, you know, they just simply didn't have the ability to you know, they didn't have anywhere to bring the stock to necessarily. And also, I suspect a lot of people, whilst they see a big snow forecast, they don't assume it's going to be quite as bad as maybe it worked out. I mean, I visited some pretty tragic circumstances, you know, farms where animals, even animals that had been housed and roofs collapsed on the animals, and it was heartbreaking to see. And you know, it's fair to say that over the course of the last two, maybe three decades, farming has been in a fairly difficult position. Having a significant blow like that at the time was really quite devastating. Because again, perhaps the public, people listening who don't know that much about farming wouldn't necessarily realise, but obviously that time of the year, April, March, April time, is a time where there's lots of lambs being born, there's calves being born, lots of young stock. And you know, this is the promise and the hope for the next sort of 12 months for the farm, of you know, the animals are getting born and more stock is available, and to lose so many animals at such a crucial time, and at a time when you would expect spring, you know, you expect things to be growing, not smothering snow. It was pretty devastating.
Losing that big number of sheep and lamb, did it also affect the economy?
Well, yes, it clearly had an impact at the time. I mean, there was already a fair degree of uncertainty about. I mean, we'd introduced 5 years earlier changes in agricultural support, partly recognition that the old system wasn't working properly, which it clearly wasn't at the time. Also, we were about to lose the red meat derogation, so we needed to change policy. And it's fair to say that whilst some of the policies worked, there were other elements that still needed more work to get the right level of support through. So it was a fairly difficult and uncertain time anyway, and then having this major blow, it was quite devastating for a number of farmers.
After the incident happened, what did your department at that time, were there any plans in place in case of another disaster similar to this?
Well, what we were able to do immediately was introduce support packages, and I was very grateful to many of the Tynwald members, most of whom are representing urban constituencies with not that many farmers, so it wasn't such a big deal for them in terms of the, who's going to vote for them. But they all recognised that this had been a dramatic event and had a serious impact on the rural economy, and support measures were put in place. I think, though, it's I discovered this when I moved back to DOI. We were looking at that time then of what would we do? Should we get new buildings to house more salt so we can get gritters out in the road? Should we buy a fleet of new vehicles to be able to manage when these conditions occur? But actually, at the time, I think the previous big snow had been maybe 20 or 30 years prior to this. And, you know, the lifetime of a vehicle, particularly a vehicle that's housed near to a load of salt, it's not going to be that long. And potentially you could end up buying new vehicles on the off chance that there might be a big snow one year. And, it's always difficult to get the balance right. It is still quite rare for us to have these significant snow events. But, of course, everyone assumes, they say, yes, but look at the Scandinavian countries. They manage. Well, yes, they do, but they know that they're going to get big snows and ice on a fairly frequent basis. The question is, can we gear up for every eventuality, despite the fact that they may not come along as that frequently? Has government got the resource to be able to fund all this? And quite clearly the answer is no. But I think the one thing that was particularly heartening was the response of the public. There was huge numbers of people turned out to try and help farmers to look for sheep, help dig sheep out. Because, of course, the other thing about sheep is they tend to try and go and find shelter. And shelter tends to be where the snow lands and lies the deepest, because it's not getting blown around by the wind. So it's you can forgive the sheep for trying to find shelter, but of course that adds to the problem.
So reflecting back to 10 years ago and then looking at last week, the events of last week, what do you think we've learned, or do you think we were a bit better prepared?
Well, obviously the event last week wasn't as big. There's no doubt about that. Well, I know that some livestock was lost as a result of the big snow. And, there is an inevitability about some losses when you have events like this. You can't plan for every single eventuality. I know that a lot of farmers do have more sheds available for bringing their sheep in for lambing and things like this. But there's only so much that you can do, and some would say that actually sheep and lambs, sheep are best left out, it's a natural thing, and nature is such that that they should be able to manage in normal conditions. But again, I think possibly the key lesson is for the Manx public to understand that if you want to have roads cleared within half an hour of a big snow event, you're going to have to pay substantially more taxes to employ more people to be out on the roads with more equipment, more salt, actually maybe if we just relaxed a bit and sat in our homes for the day and recognised that okay, there's been a bit of snow, but it's an awful lot cheaper to sit at home for a day than potentially pay substantial amounts for equipment that may not be needed for 10 years. I think that's probably the core lesson that we all need to learn from all these things.
Hello there, it's Adrian Cowan, Senior Met Officer at Ronaldsway Met Office. I've looked back at the last 20 to 30 years. It's somewhat different to when I first started work at the airport Met Office, and that was 40 years ago. Yes, I am that old. So in those early days, most of our snowfall did tend to fall during the winter months, and you didn't get too much in the spring. But what we're seeing in the last 20 to 30 years is the tendency for the winter months to be generally milder and wetter and windier, and not getting much of any snow, just usually very short-lived in the form of snow showers in winter months. Now then, we're now starting to see in these last 2 to 3 decades rather more in the way of snowfall events happening in early spring, in other words, March time. And that's a bit of a change. And a bizarre sort of statistic that we knew anyway was that we're starting to see it was more likely to have snow approaching Easter or even at Easter rather than seeing snow at Christmas time. So there's been perhaps just a slight gradual change in the seasonal emphasis on when snow was more likely, and it now is, for whatever reason, become more likely to see some snow events in March rather than in December.
Now, we wouldn't know what the reason for that change is.
No, not that I'd like to pin down for sure. I think that's one of these areas where there's more research being done. Is this one aspect of climate change, that weather patterns are slightly changing in different parts of the world in a different way? My personal thoughts are is that the jet stream over the North Atlantic is tending to be more displaced at different parts of the year than what it used to be. And by that, I mean sometimes going into the springtime, the jet stream is displacing itself further south. What does that mean for the British Isles and the Isle of Man? That means that you get more often a spell of high pressure from the north, which puts you into the cold air. Now, the danger time comes is when that then retreats again back to further north as to where it should be. And as it moves way northwards, the cold air is trying to be replaced by some warmer air from the south. And in the boundary, that's where you get the weather fronts that can produce bands of sleet and snow. And also in that battle zone between the cold air and the warm air, you get also a tightening of the wind. So in other words, you get gales. So perhaps it's all linked to the slight buckling, as we call it, the buckling in the position of the jet stream high up in the atmosphere.
Reflecting back on the snow of March 2013, what can you tell me of that?
Well, that in itself was a big event, and that there have been some similarities perhaps with the more recent event in that it did arrive from the south, trying to replace the cold air from the north. It did also have a battle zone where there were strong to gale force winds from the east. But in terms of severity, the two are completely different. Back in 2013, we did get a severe gale force easterly that was well predicted from earlier in that week. And it arrived as in the gale force easterly as a band of snow, whereas the more recent event, we knew it was going to be more tricky because we could see that it was probably going to be rain turning to sleet, turning to snow. And so we had that wet start to the transition before it became snow. Whereas back in March 2013, when it arrived purely as snow. It lasted for longer and heavier in an easterly gale. And as the warning said at the time, the red warning had been issued the day before. Watch out, there's deep snow coming tonight and tomorrow morning. And worse than that, because of the easterly gale, there's going to be deep drifting. And indeed, my colleague at the time suggested that the drifts would be in excess of 1 metre and possibly 2 metres on the west side of the Isle of Man. And lo and behold, there were not many people that would believe it, but the ground truth was we had very, very damaging deep drifts on the west side of the Isle of Man. And there was a big impact in terms of power cuts, roads closed, and very, very sadly for our farming friends, there were livestock buried in the snow, and there was a large loss of livestock lives, that lots of sheep and some cattle were buried and suffocated under the snow.
Is there a possibility that we can in future see more snowstorms or snow incidents like that?
Well, I think this could be an aspect, as I say, without any certainties, of an indicator of the types of things that we could see in a world of climate change, that there'll be a tendency to see the atmosphere and local weather conditions lurch more often from one extreme to another extreme. So when you do get it, you'll see it more often and more extreme. Now, perhaps the snowfall events will continue to be pretty rare. My fear is that we'll tend to see more likely occurrences of heavy rainfall events and gales on a seasonal basis, more frequently and perhaps sometimes more extreme than we used to see before. And if that also means that sometimes at the end of the winter or in the early spring, one or two of these events every 5 to 10 years may be a significant snowfall event, then perhaps that adds weight to this aspect of climate change, that each part of the planet will start to see extreme weather events more often.
As the Met Office, what have you learned from then that you could have maybe incorporated in the years to come or until now?
I think it's just an appreciation that the further out we can give some confidence information for the warnings about an event that's coming to affect the Isle of Man, and we can help people make plans, take mitigation actions to stay safe, and maybe alter what they're going to do. And, you know, besides forecasting the weather, which has become much, much better since the last 20 or 30 years, thanks to improved models, I think there's an appreciation that we now try to help people make an impact assessment. How is it going to affect me? How bad could it be? And if it's that bad, what am I going to do? So it's an impact assessment, conveying that as part of the warning message, because I believe that there's a confidence now that the warnings and the forecasts are good enough to make decisions on the day before, or even sometimes a few days before. We know there's a gale coming. We know there's going to be either heavy rain or maybe snow or maybe fog. Whichever element may disrupt people's lives in terms of going about business as usual, they can now start to make decisions. And if we can help make people make those decisions with confidence in advance, then it's win-win.
Yes, Alan Harding, Head of Maintenance, Highway Services, Department of Infrastructure.
Chris Thomas, Minister of Infrastructure.
Right, now, 22nd of March 2023 is when we had one of the biggest snowstorms or snow incidents on the island. Now, Alan, you were at the DOI at that time. Can you talk us back to 10 years ago?
Yep, 10 years ago, we had the heaviest snowfall for 50 years, approximately 500 millimetres, so half a metre of snow, fell during the hours of 1:30 a.m. on Friday the 22nd and 8 a.m. on Saturday the 23rd of March 2013.
Do you have any figures about how many businesses or farmers or anyone that was impacted by it?
It's quite wide-scale impact across the island, especially the west of the island and to some degree the central valley south of the island, affecting, yes, a number of businesses, obviously commuter traffic, and especially the farming community.
Now, do you remember what you were doing during that time? Were you out on the out trying to help? Were you in the office trying to work the logistics out?
It all started really on the morning of Thursday the 21st of March when I think it was 9:30 a.m. we received a red warning, which is pretty unique for the island, from the Met Office at Ronaldsway. Now a Met warning, either an amber or a red, triggers what we call a multi-agency response to a weather event. So that pulled together an inter-agency working group, which is the police, fire, ambulance, education, emergency services, joint control room, civil defence, local authorities, etc. And we all got together on the Thursday, I seem to remember, was about 6:30 in the evening to plan for the red weather event and plan a coordinated approach across the island. On the day, the Friday, when snow started to fall, I was obviously in Ellerslie Control. I coordinate these sort of weather events. But during the Thursday evening, there was a duty officer who works out of hours, and our procedures are that the duty officer would take day-to-day calls, so would deal with a normal situation, if you like. And then if things escalate, he would escalate, call myself, and we would open Ellerslie Control and man it from Ellerslie.
Right. Minister Thomas, at that time you weren't the DOI minister. Were you on the island? Do you remember that time?
Yeah, I do remember it. And I was on island, and also I went to the Lake District soon after, and I just still remember the trauma of the dead animals and the snow that was still up there against the walls here and in the Lake District close by. So I do remember the trauma. Yeah, you know, it was important to talk with people like Alan who were directly involved, and because even now we have quite a few, not quite as bad, but quite a few events like this, and it is important to remember that, you know, around 100 people or so, fewer now than there were then, you know, do get overtime, but they're up all night and they quite deserve it, doing things for all of us. Regularly they maintain highways, but then when it becomes an emergency time, they have to do other things, and they have to work with our partners in the local authorities as well. Not all the local authorities have staff, but those that do, we've got agreements with them in terms of things from yellow bins for salt and for doing things are particularly tense. I remember from our meetings with all local authorities on a Sunday, for instance, because, you know, fewer local authorities have staff on a Sunday than on in the weekday. So these are all really practical things. But your question was, do I remember it, and how could you forget it?
Right. Now, it is one of the biggest snowstorms the island experienced. We had businesses that were shut. We had over 700 homes that were damaged, or power supply was cut out. We had animals that were lost, that were found dead. We had the DOI working for days, I think about more than 4 or 5 days, trying to clear roads and clear pathways and stuff like that. Seeing the impact of that, what did the DOI learn from it?
We're always learning from these events. I mean, we've been working as a multi-agency probably for maybe 12, 15 years. So even going back to the flooding in 2012, there was lessons learned from that when we came together. The earlier we come together, the earlier we plan, and taking that coordinated approach is essential in these situations.
No, definitely. And last month, and even a few days ago, we had seen some snow here on the island. How did it impact the island, and how prepared was the DOI to deal with it?
It's again, as soon as we were made aware of the potential for the snowfall, we're in constant liaison with the Met Office, so we talk to the Met Office on a regular basis. The warnings, I must say, are really accurate. Certainly the last warning we had, really accurate on the amount of snowfall, the timing of the event, and all these things are critical when we are planning our operation. So again, last week we operated Ellerslie Control through the night. We did a shift change at 8 o'clock in the evening. Yes, we did lose some roads. We lost the mountain road and the Cronker Vody. And things were really difficult overnight, Thursday into Friday, maintaining the Peel Coast Road and Laxey Coast Road. At some point, both of those roads became impassable. But there, our focus, again, out of hours, it's very much supporting the emergency response of the emergency services. So again, maintaining an access north, because with the Cronker Vody and the mountain road being closed, it was essential we kept Laxey Coast Road open. But again, we're always mindful of the safety of our staff, because again, back in 2013, I can remember that the situation, don't like saying it, but it did become life-threatening, not just to the public, but to all the services that were working that evening. And I particularly remember the situation in Kirkmichael, where we had crews trying to work in Kirkmichael. We had trees coming down, we had overhead power lines falling, and we had to pull our resources out of Kirkmichael. It was so unsafe to be working, but it's a real fine balance to pulling the staff out or maintaining the network. As soon as we pull off the network, we can lose the network very, very quickly.
Right. Minister Thomas, do you want to add anything?
Well, just a few things. One is that it must get very frustrating sometimes to the people who have been planning and coordinating and have got the professional backgrounds to have all of the online advice. So, you know, what I now know is that there is a good time to grit, and there's a time that wouldn't work if you gritted. And you, in, so it's not as if being prepared is everything. It's doing things at the right time that really matters. A second point I would make, you know, because we all know how wonderful and how much appreciation we have at the times of an emergency, but we have to remember as well that the same people who are responding to the emergency would otherwise have been doing regular maintenance of highways and things like that. So when there is a lot of emergency response events, we don't get to fix highways, potholes and all of that sort of thing, which I think could perhaps be appreciated a bit more by the public. And the third point is, I heard then that very clear call that it got dangerous at some point in Kirkmichael, so a decision was made. We try and always to work together across government, and recently I learned that Harbours Division, that has a 24-hour marine operations centre, has actually about to launch its backup marine operations centre, and that will be able to share the load during an emergency by actually taking calls from lone operators, because there are people who go out there driving certain vehicles who are by themselves, and obviously they need a button to push like anybody else is in a risky situation. So to me, that's another thing that we've learned, because resources are tight in government. I believe that at the time of 2013, Alan would have still had over 100 staff, and I think we're now down to about 70 or so staff. So, you know, the same, fewer number of people are having to do even more, perhaps, with these increasing prevalence of adverse events. So that's something that we can all hear at this moment.
If I can ask, what sorts of plans or procedures are in place for big snow days?
We have a severe weather plan, so we implement, depending on the event, we implement the severe weather plan, and that's an escalation process. So we go from a standard, say, gritting process, so where we'll grit the primary routes. We'll then scale that up to manning all the gritters again in 2013. I think from memory we used about 20 loading shovels around the network. We had the equipment out of Puretown Quarry, so we had the big loading shovels. Bearing in mind, 2013, we had drifts on the Cronkavody, probably 12, 15 foot. So it very much depends on the event, and all the events are really, they're different, and they take a different approach. As an example, back in 2009, 2010, when we had the icy weather, we were using about 200-300 tonne of salt per day because it was really low temperatures, -7 constantly through Central Valley. 2013, over the whole event, we only used 500 tonne of salt because it was a totally different operation. It was about bulk movement of snow rather than gritting for low temperatures. So again, the approach has adjusted to the event.
Since then, has the DOI invested in any machinery or equipment?
Well, we are always investing. I mean, we've now got 6 bulk gritters. We've got 2 9-cubic metre gritters, which we trialled again about 2 years ago. The benefit of those is that when we're pre-salting, they can do 2 routes on a single fill, so you don't get as much downtime. It's more efficient. You can keep the machine on the road. So yeah, we are constantly investing, but it's really a fine balance as to how much we invest, what equipment we get for what are, you know, fairly unique events. Yes, this winter we had snow, didn't we, in I think it was January. We had cold temperatures in December, and then we've had the recent snowfall last week. The event we had in 2013, although we can never say never, could be another 20 years before we see that again. So it's really a real fine balance as to what equipment we purchase, what we invest. The main thing we are conscious about, that obviously living on an island, we can't just pick up the phone to an agency 10 miles down the road who aren't using their equipment and pull it into our pool of resource. So that's something we're really mindful of.
And to add to that, I think in recent departmental meetings, we've been mindful of making sure that even though it's coming towards the end of the financial year, we were able to replenish our our salt supply. Yeah. And I think the second point I'd make is that I was, you know, very impressed to go out with you to all of the local authorities in the regions, you know, to see how close that relationship is. Yeah. You have contractors, you have farmers and so on who are on your sort of pool of people, but you also do work with the local authorities for filling up the yellow bins. And so it's not only about investing in equipment, it's also about knowing who you can rely on and they can rely on you as a vice versa to actually have those agreements in place. And it's not only the big events like snowfalls, like by chance hasn't really come out so much in the media as yet, but by chance I actually went for the last half an hour of this last year to the bus control room. Just, you know, I knew that there would be issues with the last bus, and got permission from a good lady that both of us would go along there after a glorious evening out. And by chance, that was just when the tree was falling down in front of the steam train, and I got in just as the control room was on the phone to Alan, who actually had a chainsaw team there within about half an hour to begin the process of getting the train extricated from the tree that had just fallen down. So there are big emergency events and there are small emergency events, but what it all ends up being is somebody perhaps out there in the middle of the night, because the weather tends to be worse on an island, particularly in the middle of the night, than it is in the day.
Is there any advice for residents for big snow days?
I suppose the message really is about self-help, if I can say the word. The Minister's already alluded to the fact that we have a number of salt bins on the network. In fact, I think we have near enough now 1,000 salt bins on the network, and they're very useful for people. We did notice last Friday that quite a lot of the residents were out shifting snow off their drives, footpaths, etc. So yeah, that message really of people helping themselves and helping each other, helping us, because obviously, as the Minister again has said, we've got a limited amount of resource, so our priority is really keeping the main routes clear. Secondary to that is bus routes and then a state road. So,
and also school access,
emergency service access. So they're all things we need to concentrate on.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Little Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.